But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and, of course, the views of our callers. And, well, we welcome our callers from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us on the line Cal Grunwald, and Cal supports Radio Liberty and helps us, and of course we enjoy having him on to talk about really what's going on economically in the world today. And as our young men are fighting and dying overseas, supposedly, you know, in the name of protecting democracy in America, as we face the threat, the unknown threat of what's going to happen as far as Iran is concerned, is there going to be a war with Iran? If there is a war, will it expand into World War III, or will it simply be another little bump on the road, a little distress there in Iran? While all these things are happening overseas, which are really designed as a massive diversion, why, here at home, serious things are happening. Serious things are happening as far as our sovereignty and the move away from the sovereignty of America toward building a North American community and doing away with our borders with Mexico and with Canada. And the other thing that is happening is, of course, happening to our economy. What, indeed, is happening to our economy? The stock markets around the world are falling. They fell very dramatically about 2 weeks ago. We saw a dramatic fall in the price of gold and the price of silver, the price of platinum. Are we moving into a deflation? Are we moving into inflation? Who really knows what's going on? Well, recently, Robert Prechter, who writes the Elliott Wave Theorist, said this: a prominent deflationist throws in the towel. Another looks for good deflation. Bears on commodities expect the economy and stock market to boom. Bears on the stock market and the economy expect gold and silver to soar. A flood of articles insists that the stock market is being spooked by inflation. Even as silver crashes 30% and gold is down 20%. So the Fed agrees it's going to fight inflation by raising interest rates. But what effect is that really going to have? Are we going to go into a deflation where, of course, there is less and less money? Is the Fed going to continue expanding the money supply? And these are the questions that nobody really knows what's going on. And believe me, the smart money is getting out of this country. If you certainly read what Warren Buffett is doing, Warren Buffett is buying corporations in other nations. He bought, I think, put out $4.5 billion to buy a large company over in Israel. He is, of course, shorting the dollar overseas. Warren Buffett has a very good grasp of what's going on. He does not trust the economy here in the United States, and I think this is true for George Soros and for Bill Gates and the other people who are already pretty smart people. Whereas the average individual just feels sort of whipsawed by what's going on. He's even worried about what's going to happen to his pension funds, because so many of the pension funds are increasingly having problems. So we're going to be talking with Cal Grunwald here in just a few minutes about his view on what's happening with the economy. I think we are moving into very, very difficult times, because remember, the stability of the currency it will determine how stable the society is. And if you don't have a stable currency, you don't have a stable society. Well, Cal, how are you tonight?
Well, good, Dr. Stan. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. So tell me what your take is on what's going on.
Well, of course, as you know, the media is covering everything up. The economy in this country is getting to the point now where quite a few economists are saying it's almost a parallel with 1929. And inflation is in the focus a lot now. It's because the Bernanke is talking about continuing to raise interest rates to try to quell it. But I did a very interesting whether we want to go into this now or later, but I did a very interesting study, some research into actual inflation numbers, and I was fairly shocked, even myself, at what I found.
All right, fine. Why don't we just wait about 2 minutes before we get into that?
Okay, good.
Well, I understand that you've actually updated some of the material that you've put together for our listeners.
Yes, I've got my 26-page paper. I added another 6 pages and updated it to the present day. So there's a lot of very good information now that will bring the reader up to date and give a pretty complete picture of what's happening. So I would be more than glad to send that updated copy, updated version, to any of the listeners who wants to call in or, you know, get onto my website and then sign up there.
All right. Well, I think it's so important that people realize that there really are a lot of problems out there inherent in the gold and silver market and the coin market. There are a lot of traps, and you're just going to have to be very, very wary in the markets, and increasingly so as we get further and further into what I believe is an impending economic crisis. Now, remember, I'm not a financial advisor. I'm simply an amateur historian who's been watching things for 44 years now. And seeing some of these cycles come and go and read about what happened before. But I think that people are going to have to be very, very careful. The problem we have is that so many people are deeply in debt. They have large loans on their house. They're buying cars. They're with nothing down. And, of course, what really happens is that the car depreciates faster than your car payments. And many people, when they come to turn in their car, they owe more on the car in loans, in the loan payment, than the car is actually worth. And so people are getting further and further into debt because they're buying things they cannot afford. We've become so accustomed to buying on credit that we don't understand that old adage that, you know, the borrower is subservient to the lender. And when you're buying things on credit, why, those things really aren't yours. They belong to someone else. And when the day of reckoning comes, why, you're going to have to pay up. We'll be right back with Cal. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Cal was saying that he's been studying the figures on inflation. Of course, the government, it tells us, oh, you can trust us, and we've got just 2.5%, maybe 3% inflation at the most, and oh, we're so concerned about 3% inflation. But what's the truth, Cal? As you're looking into this, really the old adage that figures don't lie, but liars can sure figure, comes forward. I don't think the government's being honest. Do you?
Well, no, of course, in the fine print, they do say that the inflation numbers, the CPI numbers, do not include food, fuel, or housing. And when I've talked to people in the last several years anyway, when, you know, obviously the prices of everything have been going up, I just tell people that, of course, the government is lying, obviously, but actual inflation is anywhere from 12 to 15%. Well, people kind of gasp when they hear that, and they say, how do you know? I say, well, I don't, but I do, which isn't really a good answer, but just by talking to people across the country and business owners, they're telling me how the prices on everything are just skyrocketing.
Well, I think you only have to look and see what's happening to the price of food. Look and see what's happened to the price of gasoline over the last year. And, of course, what the government does is it takes everything that's going up off of the Consumer Price Index, the CPI, because they don't want to tell you the truth. And so they don't, of course, put down the price of houses and how they have gone up dramatically. They calculate the price of rents rather than the price of houses, and they keep shifting what they're doing. So you're comparing apples with oranges. Last year it was an apple, and now we're going to count the oranges. But then how can you compare last year's figures with these year's figures? And the truth of the matter is you can't. It is all part of perception. And as Edward Bernays had said so well, you know, we are governed, our minds are molded, our tastes are formed, our ideas are suggested largely by men we have never heard of. And that's what's happening as far as the economy is concerned. They're putting out figures that they know are incorrect. And they ask us to believe them. When did government officials ever tell the truth? And when was a government official ever punished for lying to the American people?
Well, good question. My research is very, very interesting. And this also is included in a spreadsheet in my paper. Very simple spreadsheet, but it tells a dramatic story. In fact, about 3 weeks ago, I did some about 3 or 4 hours worth of research on the internet. One of my clients suggested that I, you know, I've always wanted to know what the actual inflation was, you know. So I did a little research. I looked on the internet on the international commodity chart, and I picked out, you know, kind of randomly, but you know, eight different commodities that Americans would consume on a day-to-day basis. Not all Americans would consume all of these, but they'd be pretty representative. Like you mentioned, you know, gas at the pump. So I remember 3-4 years ago, I was paying $1.20 or $1.25 a gallon at the pump. Well, now it's almost $3 here in Wisconsin. And so I picked things like that, you know, unleaded gas, heating oil, natural gas, propane, electricity, coffee, sugar, and orange juice. Now, again, these are pretty representative of things people use on a day-to-day basis. You know, you've seen a lot of articles of people in the cold climates up where I am, you know, complaining about the heating oil increasing and fuel oil, and you know, people with older people on pensions and set incomes and Social Security having a hard time, if not impossible time, to pay their heating bills in the wintertime, and they're crying about that, and rightly so. So I picked those 8 different commodities, and then I went down, I went back to May of 2003. I wanted to get a 3-year span to see what the increase was, or the decrease, whichever the case may be, to get some real numbers. And then, so I went on these commodity charts, and I took the number of whatever the particular unit was selling for in May of 2003, and then I did May of 2006. And then I figured out the percent increase of that particular commodity, and then I added up that increase and divided by 8 to get an overall inflation rate for the 8 different commodities. And I came up with 106.6% increase over a 3-year period of time among those 8 commodities. Now that...
Well, certainly, you know, the copper has gone up dramatically, and certainly so many of the base commodities that have been traded have gone up. Now, some of them haven't gone up that much, but certainly copper has almost doubled in price over the last 3 years or so.
Well, actually, when you reduce that, and I'll get to the metals next, it's part of this next thing I did, but so over the last 3 years, then the actual inflation of those commodities was 35.5% per year. 35.5% per year, 10 times what the government is telling us. That's how dramatic the lie is. So then I went to, and I did some metals. I did copper, aluminum, platinum, palladium, gold, and silver. And the same thing, May of 2003 to May of 2006, they've gone up 164%, or 54.7% per year for 3 years. So they not only kept up with inflation, they outpaced it by 20% every year, the metals. And then copper has gone from 50 cents to like 250, so it's gone up actually 5 times. Then what I did is, of course, gold and silver were among them. Together they went up 155%, or a little over 51% a year for 3 years. So if people are looking to do something with their money, that's outpaced inflation by 20% a year. And then I did the stock market. Went back to 2003. 2006 and went up 31% in 3 years. Now, the only reason it went up that much is because of 9-1-1. You know, it got down to 7,600, and right after that, it started on the climb. So then what I did is I went back to the year 2000, 2006, a 6-year span, and the stock market has gone up 7% in 6 years, 7% or 1.2% a year. So it's a real simple, you know, bunch of research. You know, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to do it, but those are accurate numbers. Anybody can go there and look in these same charts that I did and do the same numbers.
Well, I think we're living in very, very dangerous times. And I don't think the average person has any idea, you know, that certainly I believe we're beginning to see the implosion of the world monetary system. It's not just the United States. The major generators of money throughout the world have been the United States, Japan, and Germany. And Japan really is the largest generator of money. We think it's our government, but it isn't. You see, none of these countries have any restraint on what they're doing. It would be like simply a Monopoly game where the banker could keep just bringing more and more and more and more and more money indefinitely. And, of course, everybody would be very, very prosperous playing the game. But the money would be progressively losing its value. And what Japan has been doing is lending out money all over the world at 0%. It creates money out of nothing. It lends it out at 0%. And that money has been really fueling so much of the economic development of the whole world. And, of course, a lot of that money then has been brought to the United States and invested in government bonds. But there's nothing behind that money at all. And what people do not understand is when you have a monetary system without an anchor in it, it's like a ship at sea in the middle of a storm. And of course, to keep it from getting blown up on the rocks, you've got to have an anchor. You've got to have something that to keep the wind from dashing the ship to bits. And that is what gold has always been. It's been to prevent the bankers from doing what the bankers have been doing in the United States. And that is simply inflating progressively not only the money, because there's only about $700 billion worth of money out there, but it's the credit. It is the well, they have increased the debt based upon credit in the United States within 3 months between January of this year and March, the end of March of this year. $1 trillion, the most rapid expansion of credit and debt in this country's history. And these are the zip figures. Anybody would like to see them, we'll be glad to provide them for you. The debt figures here put out by the Federal Reserve System. And all of this is, of course, eventually going to be played out. That debt is going to have to be destroyed and to get back to some sort of a sound foundation. The difficulty is, of course, that everybody living on debt, what happens when you're going to have to pay back the money you borrowed and there's no money out there in this in society to pay it back with? That's, of course, where you get into real problems. Because when you owe the money and when they call the money in or they raise the interest rates to 10, 15, 20, 30% a year, and right now I think they'll allow you to bill somewhere between 20 and 28% a year on credit cards, which is certainly usury at its worst. What happens when they're charging you 28% a year and there's no way to pay off your credit card? Where do you get the money? And every year, of course, it's another 28% and another 28%. And then maybe they'll take the restrictions, it'll go to 30 or 40 or 50%. It's just like the mafia, isn't it? Well, Cal, you know, what the question is, are we going to inflation? Are we going to do inflation? Are we going to have stagflation?
Well, to me, it's fairly obvious the inflation is here. They're grossly covering it up. And, you know, people see it all over, but, you know, they read the media and somehow that seems to take care of everything. But a dollar doesn't go very far. $100 doesn't go very far. I remember years ago, $100 was a lot of money. Now it's just, you know, it's two tankfuls of gas. So it's here to stay. The Fed knows it. They're very, very scared of it because it's a runaway wild animal, and they can't tame it.
Well, I think the thing is that the Federal Reserve System was established to maintain a stable currency in the United States. The Federal Reserve was taken over by people from the Trilateral Commission, starting with Paul Volcker, then followed by Alan Greenspan, and they have destroyed the foundation of our monetary system because they know that by doing that they can destroy the sovereignty of our nation, because these people are proud internationalists. And as David Rockefeller said in his book Memoirs on page 405, some people accuse us, the Rockefeller family and me, of being part of a secret cabal that is conspiring with others throughout the world to establish a new economic order. And of course, if that is the charge, I stand guilty. I plead guilty, for I am a proud internationalist. And of course, David Rockefeller is the man who controls the people who've gotten us into this current situation. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I would just mention we do have copies of David Rockefeller's memoirs. If you'd like to get them, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. I think everybody should have that. They should show it to others and understand who really pulls the strings in America. And believe me, it's not the members of Congress or the members of the Senate. They're simply figureheads for the power elite. Well, Cal, what's happening as far as certainly your customers are concerned? Are people taking advantage of this drop-off in the price of gold and silver to purchase more? Or are they sitting on the sidelines waiting to see what's going to happen?
Well, there's a lot of, I guess, both things. People now are taking advantage of the drop, and I'm really glad that it happened. Because I was getting very concerned once it hit 7:30 that, you know, we got around the 750 to 800 mark, we have a panic. And once Americans panic and start buying gold, it's all going to be gone in just a couple, 3 weeks' time. So now that there was a lot of profit taking, and of course the bankers now are sitting on it pretty heavily, although it went up, $8, $9 today, and it's creeping back toward the 600 mark. It was 583.80 today, it finished. So I think once it gets 600, it's going to start climbing again pretty fast, and then we're going to see another spurt. So, yes, people are buying. They're getting off the fence more and more, although it's not approaching a panic yet. I'm recommending that people buy gold rather than silver at this time, because gold is what's in short supply. Silver you can always pick up later or exchange your gold for some silver. So gold is what's going to dry up first. And what I also stress a lot, and people just don't seem to get it because the media doesn't say it. They don't come right out and say that our dollar has lost 60% of its value in the last 3.5 years. It's only worth 40 cents now on the dollar of 3.5, 4 years ago. And people don't realize they've got $100,000 in the stock market or in the bank. It's only worth $40,000 today in actual purchasing power, and that's what people have a hard time grasping, because they can't see it. The numbers are still there. They look the same. It's kind of like a very, very insidious.
And I think the difficulty is most people really don't understand the monetary system. They think a dollar is a dollar, that it just sounds as a dollar, and the trouble is the dollar is no longer sound. And increasingly why people are trying to get out of the dollar, and I think we see that manifested in the fact that Warren Buffett is investing $16.5 billion betting against the dollar. And he lost $900 million this last year betting against the dollar, and he's holding his position. That's incredible.
Well, that should tell everybody something, what the big boys do in a big way. As little people should do in a big way with our own money, because what's happening is when the government is looking the other way, because what it's, you know, the falling dollar, George Bush is not concerned about it. In fact, there was an article in the Financial Times the other day that said, the big corporations want the falling dollar because it makes our goods more saleable overseas and it reduces the trade deficit. So they're the ones that are benefiting, but by a reduced trade deficit, selling more goods, and of course the government is in debt with the big corporations. But what's happening as an adverse side effect is that it's wiping out and erasing the wealth of the middle class.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here with Cal Grundle. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Cal was making an excellent point. He's pointing out that the big corporations want to weaken the dollar. Why? Because if the dollar is strong and we try to sell our goods overseas, it costs other people more money, and they're not going to buy them. So lower the value of the dollar. Why, it's great for the people who are producing goods in this country, but everything that the average person buys that comes from overseas will cost them more money. And people don't understand when we intentionally and purposely weaken the dollar. It is the government's program to steal the value of the savings and the wealth of the American people. And you have no control over this, because it is being done by people who are unelected, who really are controlled by the elitists, by the Trilateral Commission, the people who control the central banking system that determine the value of our currency. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Cal was saying that a lot of people are actually buying into the drops in gold and silver because, probably we will not have a similar chance again, and I think he may well be right. going to be very interesting to see what's happening. But the price of gold has crept up from about 560. In fact, it hit 590, 595 on the Dubai Exchange. And I always like to see look at the Dubai Exchange on Kitco to see what's really going on in the world. Our markets are totally manipulated by the people with the plunge control team. We know, for instance, that Goldman Sachs has been shorting the dollar. Why would they do that? Because they knew it was going to go down, and that's how they make their money. And of course, we know where they got the new chairman of the Treasury, new Secretary of the Treasury. Why, he's a man who came from Goldman Sachs, and of course, he gave up a job that was paying something like $40 million a year to take a job that pays $180,000 a year as the Secretary of the Treasury. Now, he must either be a great patriot to give up a job that pays $40 million a year and replace it with a job that pays $180,000 a year, or he's going to be representing Goldman Sachs and going to make a fabulous fortune for them, you know, in the weeks and months that lie ahead. By, of course, when you have the people from the big banks who are shorting our currency, who are shorting gold, you know, suddenly coming to work for as Secretary of the Treasury, you have to ask yourself, who is he going to represent? Is he going to represent the American people, or is he going to represent the powerful international financiers? What do you think about that, Cal?
Well, I mean, you obviously hit it on the head, and people need to, you know, wake up and pay attention to some of these things and start reading between the lines. And there's really not much any of us can do about it, as you said. You know, we're just minnows in a big pond. But we can do something individually with our own wealth at this point. And I still, even though some people are buying, I still sense a real kind of, apathy or, deer in the headlights, frog in the pan kind of thing from a lot of people. They just, they somehow cannot believe that this is all going to happen and it's going to happen to us. It's just like the Jewish people in World War II, and they didn't realize they were going to the concentration camps and they'd never get out of there. Now they know better, but doesn't mean it's not going to happen again. So it's, people need to really, you know, come to grips with gold went up to 730 for a reason. You know, the rest of the world is fleeing into gold for a certain reason. Why? Because they have no use for a dollar anymore. Every country in the world has rejected it. That's why they're buying gold. They're getting out of dollars, buying gold, and taking physical possession.
And yet so many dollar countries are holding dollars as the reserve currency, and they all realize the dollar is going to go down. It's not a matter of if, it's simply a matter of when it will be manipulated down again, because there's absolutely nothing behind it. It's something that really has no intrinsic value, and it is all a matter of perception. As we start our program so often, reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And we know, of course, that Russia is moving to double its reserves in gold, and China's buying gold, and certainly India's buying gold, and Argentina, and countries that are not part of this internationalist clique, are beginning to lay in gold, just as the squirrel prepares for the difficult times. So countries are preparing to protect their currency, while the leaders of this country are doing everything they can to destroy ours. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. Give us a call. If you have a question to comment, you agree, you disagree, love to hear what you have to say here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and certainly our guest this evening is Cal Grunwald, and we were just reading, of course, at the very beginning of the program from Robert Prechter's Elliott Wave Theory. And Prechter is an extremely brilliant individual. Now, he feels exactly the opposite the way that Bob Chapman, who is a frequent guest here, feels. Bob Chapman feels, of course, they're going to continue an inflationary spiral, until the whole thing breaks and then go into deflation. Robert Prechter believes that the deflation is going to start now. And what is really so fascinating, if you read him and follow him regularly, he called within a few days the peak in the price of gold and silver, and he called this many, many months ago because he follows the economic cycles. He calls them economic waves. And, of course, he believes now that we have started this contraction of the monetary supply throughout the world and that people should be in cash. He is not optimistic as far as gold and silver is concerned. He really believes that one day cash will be king. I disagree with him, of course, but I think it's a fascinating position to take, and I'll have to get Robert Prechter onto one of our programs in the near future so that at least you can hear what he has to say. He's a brilliant guy, and certainly we have all of the experts out there telling us what's going to happen. Whether it be, of course, Richard Russell, who really does believe that we're going into an inflationary spiral, but, of course, he's putting everything he has into either into gold and silver or into CDs, because he thinks eventually that inflationary spiral is going to collapse. And, of course, he wants to preserve something of what he's worked so very hard for. And Richard Russell has been around for over 50 years. He must be in his 80s now. But he feels that we are moving into a major bear market, not only here but throughout the world. And people have forgotten that we are no longer isolated. We put ourselves into a position where we are interdependent with other nations throughout the world. And all the nations of the world, all the central banks of the world, work in concert. And Professor Quigley describes that on page 324 of his book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, where he says that all of the banks of the world are working in concert, and of course they want to create a world feudalistic system under their control. And they actually control the governments of their respective countries. In other words, the central bank controls really the economy of the United States rather than being controlled by members of Congress. In fact, I was told today by the wife of an ex-congressman that when the congressman was back in Washington, D.C., one of his friends said, "Look, don't take things so seriously, Bill. This is all just play acting." We'll be right back. Well, Cal, why don't you, first of all, get your telephone number, your website out, and then tell people how they can get in touch with you and what they'll actually get if they do get in touch with you. And let me just mention one more time. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Go ahead, Cal.
Yes, you can give me a call at 414-234-8267. That's 414-234-8267, or you could go to my website, which is goldandsilverexchange.info. That's goldandsilverexchange.info. And you can go to my website and, you know, sign up for my paper, which I've just last week I finished revising it. I spent a couple long nights and, you know, brought everybody up to date. Pretty pertinent information in there, including information from Article 43 from the 73rd Congress in 1933. It basically says if you deposit your money in any bank, you give up title to your money and loan it to the bank. And that's why the bank feels so possessive of it, because you gave up title to it. It's right there. And the law has not been repealed. So it's a pretty fascinating material. It's 32 pages now instead of 26, and I've also got that the inflation chart on the commodities, it's right there, plain and simple, it's black and white. Real easy to comprehend. So I'll be glad to send you that paper. And, of course, my other documents, you know, the emergency banking order, the article on the Fort Knox gold is not there anymore, and then some very fascinating articles from the New York Times when Roosevelt confiscated gold. She got my package of information. She said, "These articles are absolutely incredible." She said, "Can you get me the complete articles?" She said, "Because they're cut off." Well, I can't, but nevertheless, these articles are startling. So it's all in my information package, which is free of charge, anybody who asks it, and I'll be glad to send it. If you, again, want to call me, 414-234-8267, or go on my website, the goldandsilverexchange.info.
Goldandsilverexchange.info. That's www.goldandsilverexchange.info. And again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. We're here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Well, really, what's so interesting is that the housing bubble has begun to contract. And all the housing prices are going up just a little bit in some places, and most places, why the houses are not selling well. And in some places, the price of housing is beginning to drop. Not precipitously yet, but beginning to drop just a little bit. What you're seeing is that many of the major developments that were scheduled to go in, say, to Las Vegas or other areas where houses have just been selling so rapidly, now suddenly with the interest rates going up and the people being aware, the developers being aware that it's going to be more difficult for people to borrow money to buy the home is why they're canceling some of the contracts for construction, taking them years to get the building contracts and everything in place. But rather than risk a lot of money, because when they build these massive big developments, it's all built with borrowed money from the bank. And then, of course, as long as people are going to buy them, why, you're going to do very well. But what happens, of course, if nobody's there to buy them and you've got to keep paying interest on your large bank loan? And, of course, it goes on month after month, year after year, until eventually you go bankrupt yourself and you have to, of course, be foreclosed on by the bank. This is the way things go in their cycles, and this is what people who don't have much memory don't understand, is that this has happened time and again throughout the history of this country, where the banks have created all sorts of prosperity by creating artificial money. But then when they contract the money supply, and they will sometime during the course of the cycle, then, of course, there's no money to pay off the loans, and then people lose their homes, and they lose their farms, and they lose their industries, and it's happened over and over and over again down through history, whether it was the ancient Venetians or in Florence or in England or here in the United States, you know, certainly after the Revolutionary War, and then in 1811 and in 1832-1834 period, as the banks began to contract the money supply. And then it happened many times, 1870 and 1890 and 1907, and it was because of the financial instability following the great economic collapse of 1907. It wasn't an economic collapse. It was simply that the banks shut off the supply of money, and all those people who had been foolish enough to borrow were simply standing there looking for a way out, looking to get the money to pay off their debts. And, of course, there wasn't any money that was available, and they lost everything. And that's why the people clamored for some redress from the excess control and the exploitation by the banks. And so it was that the government came up with a program called the Federal Reserve System, and everybody thought it was the means by which the federal government was going to control the wicked bankers, whereas in reality it was the wicked bankers program to control the banking system so they could continue to exploit the people. They were supposed to maintain a stable currency, and they have not done it. And these people should be put in prison. They had promised to do something. They have not done it. And they've robbed the people of their heritage. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Cal, you know, do you think the average person really understands how the banking system works, and that the banks can actually create money out of nothing and then let it out at interest?
No, I don't think too many people have a clue that that's really what's happening. They're too tied up in two job families and trying to pay the bills and, you know, all the new cars and the boats and everything else and the campers, and they don't realize what's happening. And now, you know, with all of our good jobs, you know, going overseas and have been overseas, they can't make ends meet. I'm talking to people all over the country, and I stand, and that's exactly what they're telling me about the housing bubble. you know, there's so many houses for sale now. You know, it's a buyer's market because, you know, there's nobody with any money. Because the banks are not loaning any money and the people don't want the higher interest money. So the faucet is starting to get shut off. And now people are starting to really suffer. So they don't have the money to pay their bills. It's happening all over the country now, and, you know, nobody has good jobs anymore. I talked to a computer scientist today, and he said the days of the high-paying computer jobs in this country are gone. In fact, he came over from Germany. He says they're gone. And so he's going to start looking for some kind of a menial job. And of course, the media is not going to say anything like that. They're not going to tell the truth because people might wake up and say that things really are that bad.
And really, what was so interesting about the Senate immigration bill, if you've read it, they were going to allow certainly well over 175,000 computer technicians and other people like that to come in from other countries as long as there was an employer who said that they would have a job. And these people are going to be brought in at much lower salaries as computer technicians and engineers and specialists in the very electronic fields, to undercut the value of the wage levels of the people here in the United States. This is all part of the planned program of redistribution of wealth, or equitable distribution of wealth between nations. And that's what's called for in the Earth Charter, written by Mikhail Gorbachev and of course, by Marie Strong and by Stephen Rockefeller, who is the nephew of David Rockefeller. And these people really do want to redistribute your wealth, but not their wealth. So, and any of you who have not read the Earth Charter, we'll make a copy of that available for you. If you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927, just ask for a free copy of the Earth Charter. But of course, you can, if you have access to the internet, you can go up and type in Earth Charter and read it, point 10A. And then you begin to understand that bringing in all these people from other countries to take good jobs here away from the American citizens is part of the master plan. But they can't tell the American people that. And it's going to be very interesting to see how the immigration bill lays out. But, of course, the Senate version of the immigration bill is simply a disaster and part of this overall plan to impoverish the American people. And as the good jobs go, how are people going to pay off their bills? So increasingly, I think we're going to see more and more people having difficulty as the interest rates continue to rise. And, of course, so many of the people have ARMs, adjustable rate mortgages. And, you know, they're talking now, some people are trying to get those, you know, readjusted, and sometimes they're having to pay 8% or 9% or 10%. There is no way the average person can pay 8 or 9 or 10% interest on their adjustable rate mortgages. Now, certainly if you've got good credit, you're going to get a better rate, but, you know, if you have poor credit, and so many of the people have been buying homes, and they don't have any credit. And then, of course, when the adjustable rate mortgage is not going to be available, why the price of the interest rate is going to go up. And this is how the people are going to end up losing their homes and becoming impoverished. And this is exactly what is planned. But they can't tell the American people that. They, any more than they can tell the American people that the plan is to do away with our national sovereignty, and that's what the immigration legislation is all about. That's what the plan for rebuilding a North American community is all about. That is what the Security and Prosperity Partnership is all about. They can't tell the American people they want to do away with the sovereignty of the American people. They can't tell the American people that what the Fed's program is now is to crash the economy and impoverish the American people. Well, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 464-8295. Our guest is Cal Grunwalder. We're simply talking about what's happening economically here in America. Well, Cal, you know, of course, you were mentioning as you talk to people, they're concerned about this, but do they really understand the part that the Federal Reserve System plays, the part that the banking system plays about this greatest scam of all time, being able to make money out of nothing or create it out of nothing, and then charge interest on it?
Again, no, simply because most people are just lost in their own difficulties, you know, making ends meet. We get taxed 55 cents out of every dollar that we bring home. And of course, that's all illegal, but it doesn't really matter. But the point is, we're so oppressed and so kept down, you know, just like the, you know, the blacks on the plantation. You know, we're always fed information that's, you know, half truth or no truth at all in the media, and, you know, keep people tuned into the TV and the newspapers and the magazines, feed them what you want to feed them, and, you know, keep them in the dark, and that's where most people end up. They are that way, and they're going to end up that way. Only a select few that are, you know, tuned into alternate media, radio, TV, things like that, are awake. And those people are doing something about their futures.
Now, what sort of coins would people be getting if they came to you and asked you, you know, advice on gold coins? Would you put them in Kruger Ranch? Would you put them in American Eagles? Would you put them in St. Gaudens, you know, a 1933? What sort of gold coins should people have, or should they have a number of gold coins, and should they have some, you know, since they have very small denomination gold coins, like the tenth of an ounce?
Well, it's a very good question. I have a very, very kind of middle of the road approach there. There's basically two ways, you know, to buy gold. You can buy the gold bullion, which are American Eagles, Maple Leafs, Kruger Rands, bars, blocks, ingots. And it's relatively cheap because it's not that much over spot. But you run the risk then of having that confiscated, because even if you look at the face value of an American Eagle or Maple Leaf, it has a $50 face value. That's because the government, when they take it, they will give you face value for that in paper money. So that's not very good. Again, I'm totally against, as my paper points out, these scam coin companies. They make their huge profits, two ends of the spectrum. They sell these high mint state, very, very rare coins that are only for collectors. And it'll cost 5, 6, 7 times what you need to pay for an ounce of gold. They push those and sell those because there's huge profits in them. On the other end, they're pushing foreign gold like British sovereigns or Swiss francs or French francs, misrepresenting them as private, non-confiscatable because they're minted prior to 34. Which only, by the way, applies to American gold. So it's kind of a middle-of-the-road approach. I recommend the circulated low gold coins, the $10 and $20 liberties, the St. Gaudens. The premium is fairly close to spot, and they have some privacy from the confiscation. They also have tremendous upside potential, as their history has been as recently as 99. They doubled in price over a comparable weight bullion coin, because of supply and demand. Now, we're kind of on the verge of that right now. There's not that many of these coins around. These big coin companies don't stress them because there's really not much money in it. That's the bottom line for them. So they want to make huge profits on you. And I continue to talk to people during the week and during the month. And sad to say, just about every one of them got burned and scammed by a coin company in one of those two things, or else the coin company put them into, you know, a huge amount of silver. You know, as a tremendous upside potential investment. I was just talking with a lady the other day who bought 4,500 ounces of silver eagles. Well, you know, that weighs 350 to 400 pounds. And, it's, you know, what they're advocating is, you know, because of the tremendous upside potential of silver, that you, when it spikes up, you sell it. Okay, so what does that involve? You sell all that silver to make a dollar. You've got to box it all up, take it down to the post office, spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars. It costs $100 to send a 55-pound bag of silver. So you've got to send it all to a coin company, get the money back, and then you wait for the gold, for the silver to go down again to buy it again. So you're continually, you know, hauling hundreds of pounds of silver to the post office. You get a check in the mail. What happens if something happens while you sold your silver? You have nothing in your house. What happens if we have another engineered event? 911. Those banks close their doors and you're stuck. You can't buy anything. And you just divested yourself of all your real money. Just because you listen to somebody who was talking about tremendous upside potential and make a dollar in the metals. Gold and silver are not about making money. They're about preserving wealth and having something to barter with, and I seem to be the only one saying these things out there, but it's the only thing that really makes sense to most people.
Okay, fine. Well, go ahead. I certainly agree that you really what you want to do is try to preserve the wealth that you have. most of us are never going to be wealthy at all. I mean, the wealth is going to be for those people who were in the elite, who were able to create money out of nothing through the banking industry, or certainly in the stock market, where it's just like creating money out of nothing. They create a stock, and then, of course, they sell it. And, of course, it's all about a presumed value, having very little to do, many oftentimes, with reality, as we saw during the last bubble. But, you know, the gold and silver have maintained their value in one way or another throughout the ages. If everything collapses, they'll still have value. If everything goes up, they'll still have value. We'll be back in just a moment here to wrap up the program. Well, Cal, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. Go right ahead.
Again, the little bit of research that I did, I wanted to, you know, emphasize that I'd be glad to send that along with the rest of my revised paper to anybody who wants to either sign up on my website or give me a call. But when the metals went up 164%, while inflation was at 106% over the last 3 years, I mean, that tells the story. So it's because the rest of the world sees what's happening over here. They understand what's happening to our dollar. They understand what's happening, you know, in the rest of the world. The rest of the world is not really much better. But they've, in mass, rejected our dollar. And they're fleeing into gold and silver and other commodities because they want something real. Our dollar is not real. That's why they're getting out of it and buying gold and silver. So, you know, it's a protection. It's an automatic protection. If they have the gold, if they have the silver, they have something real when everything collapses, and something to survive on and to prosper. So that's why I encourage people to look at what you've got out there. And first of all, you should have your cash cushion. I tell everybody this. Have your cash cushion, plenty enough cash that you feel comfortable with while the dollar still has some value. And you should have at least 6 months to a year's worth of food. And once you get those things in place, then you can start thinking about gold and silver. And I do turn business away. People get kind of shocked when I say, you know, do those things first. And until you've got your cash cushion and food, I don't even want to talk to you. Because those are the things you're going to need. First and foremost, you're going to need food. You're going to need that to survive.
Cal, I think we somehow lost Cal. Do you want to give Cal a call back there, please? And I don't know what happened, but I'll ask my producer to try to get Cal back on the line under any circumstances. I think Cal's advice is good. I think we're moving into difficult times. I don't know what's going to happen. Is there going to be another 9-1-1 attack? You know, an attack that, you know, where supposedly all of these hijackers, you know, were killed, and yet we know that at least 7 of them are still alive. In fact, that was well covered in Inside Magazine. And then somebody gave orders, and all of the advertisers in Inside Magazine withdrew their advertising, and Inside Magazine closed down, because we cannot let the American people know that 7 at least 7 of the 15 hijackers are alive and well. Well, we have Cal back on the line. Cal, are you there?
I don't know. Something happened. So.
All right. Well, those things happen all the time. Those the gremlins will do anything. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, you're just a little distant. But I want you to go ahead. Hang on. We'll be back here in just a moment. And I want you to get out your name and your website one more time, right?
All right. Very good.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we got Cal back on the line. We lost him there for a minute. Cal, get your telephone number and your website out one more time.
It's 414-234-8267, and my website is www.goldandsilverexchange.info, goldandsilverexchange.info, and you can sign up for my paper there, and be glad to talk to anybody who wants to call in, and, I hate high pressure, so... I used to be a teacher, so I do everything through education. I'd be glad to send you my paper and just discuss with you your financial situation.
All right, fine. Thanks very much, Cal. God bless.
Thank you. We'll talk to
you again next month. All right, fine. Well, that was Cal, and certainly we want to point out that we're living in very uncertain times. Are we going to have inflation? Are we going to have deflation? And quite frankly, I don't know. I suspect we may have both, and I think that would be the worst of both worlds. But time is going to tell us, but one thing I can tell you, and that is we have a totally unstable financial monetary system. And if you've not heard my talk on the financial tsunami, And, of course, to see in the syllabus, we recommend very strongly that you get the information, and you'll see the government statistics. And you specifically ask for the latest ZIP figures that show that in the last 3 months, credit and debt have increased $1 trillion in the United States, and the same thing is happening throughout the world, and we're on the edge of a financial precipice, on the edge of a financial tsunami. Well, certainly we hope that many of you out there will want to get my little pamphlet on the history of money. I think it does. It will give you an excellent overview of what's going on. If you have not read the book by Ed Griffin, who will be our guest the next hour, The Creature from Jekyll Island, you really want to. Ed certainly has given one of the most concise evaluations of how this whole monetary system works. And I think, I know I learned a great deal from his book. I know you will as well. The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, a book by Professor Anthony Sutton, written before he died, goes into this great hoax, which is the Federal Reserve System, which is owned by originally by central bankers, but now under the total control of the Trilateral Commission that controls our government and then hopes to control the governments of all the rest of the world and bring about a new international order. Those books are available by Talk on the Financial Tsunami, either in DVD or video, The Syllabus on Financial Tsunami, the book The Creature from Jekyll Island, the book The Federal Reserve Conspiracy, and we have now available the book Memoirs by David Rockefeller. And it's a soft cover. Memoirs by David Rockefeller, you want to get it, you want to read it, you want to understand what the Trilateral Commission is about. If you'd like to get a free copy of my May newsletter, which tells you what Barry Goldwater tried to tell the American people back in 1979 about the master plan of these wicked people who are traitors to the United States, whose dedication is to the one world system under their control. Why, that is my main newsletter. You can specifically request a copy of it. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Remember our website, radioliberty.com. Remember, we do carry the Berkey products if you'd like to get them through us. And then we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and our ministers. But please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision, and for our protection. And so, well, we'll be back with you in very, very shortly. Until then, may the Lord be with you. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us certainly one of the great giants in this movement, a man I first met in December of 1962, when he was at my house giving a talk. And I shall never forget that evening, and really how well he presented the problems that faced our country at that time. And, of course, I've admired Ed Griffin ever since then. We've talked many, many times in the intervening years. But Edward Griffin has written a wonderful book called The Creature from Jekyll Island. Of course, he's written a number of other books on the United Nations and the other things that's been going on. And he's a patriot. He's dedicated his life to trying to educate the American people as to what is really going on and why we're losing our freedom. And certainly today we are losing our freedom. I mean, under the guise of fighting the wicked Osama bin Laden, who we have never tried to catch over there. I suppose that he's hiding in a cave in Pakistan, but other people suggest he's at Nob Hill at the Fairmont Hotel in San Francisco, in Western garb, drinking amid juleps at the bar. I don't know what happened to Osama bin Laden, but I will tell you, we've never tried to catch him. And, of course, but because of the danger of Osama bin Laden, and the wicked terrorists who threaten America, but of course we've left our borders open. We've never tried to close them, and there have been no terrorist attacks of any measure at all in the United States since 9/11. And if you read the letter, which is included in my latest newsletter, that's the June newsletter, the letter that President Ahmadinejad of Iran wrote to President Bush, he points out there's no way that a terrorist attack could have taken place on 9/11 without the American intelligence agencies knowing about it and allowing it to happen. And he has the question, why has nobody in our intelligence been fired for incompetence or involvement? And that's a question we all ought to ask, too. Why was nobody in our intelligence agencies who were so terribly incompetent that they allowed the 9/11 attacks to take place and 3,000 Americans to be killed? Why has nobody been fired or sanctioned or relieved of their duty or perhaps even tried for treason? Well, but that's enough of that. Right now I want to take you to Ed Griffin. Hi, Ed. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing fine, Stan. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Well, do you have any thoughts at all on what's happening, at least economically, as far as, because you've written the classic book on economics, The Creature from Jekyll Island?
Well, that's kind of an open question, Stan, and I'm not used to those kinds of questions. Usually it's something specific, but I like this. What's on my mind?
Go ahead.
In the field of economics, I think, to be honest with you, the thought that keeps popping into my mind over and over again is how much control the powers that be have over the system, and the great extent to which the old rules, the laws of supply and demand, the laws that normally take place in a free market, how those rules have been bent and perhaps paralyzed. Years ago, somebody asked me if the crash was inevitable. You know, they still ask me that question. When do you think the big collapse is coming? How long will it take? Why haven't we had one so far? And is it inevitable? And my answer has always been the same. It's that I think that as long as the forces at the free market are alive to any degree, then it's just a question of time before it will happen.
Hold up. We'll be back in just a moment with Edward Griffin. All right, Ed, you're talking about, you know, the fact that as long as the free market forces are alive, why, there will be a crash. But the question is, Are the free market forces alive, or is everything really controlled today?
Well, that's where I was headed with that little diatribe of mine. It's obvious that the free market forces are not alive. At least they're not alive and well. They may still be alive, but they're certainly not well. It's pretty clear, I think, even to the most jaundiced observers, that the markets have been rigged. The stock market has been artificially supported. The price of gold and silver has been artificially suppressed. And the question arises, wow, what kind of power must exist in the hands of a few people in order to override these free market forces? And so that's what's on my mind. I just wonder if the market is completely dead, if it will ever recover, or whether we really are in a totally rigid state where every aspect of the economy is controlled forevermore, and we'll be allowed to have what they allocate and no more. And there'll be very little profit-taking unless you're on the inside, of course, and everybody will be gradually pushed into a little niche where they'll be allocated their basic necessities of life and so forth. That's on my mind almost every day. I'm amazed at how they keep that stock market up, when in my mind I think the true level of the stock market should be down around, oh, probably 4,000 or 5,000 points on the Dow. And I think the price of gold should be of at least 3 or 4 times what it is today. And the price of silver should, if the free market forces were at work without hindrance, probably should be about 8 or 10 times what they are. So anyway, that's what's on my mind regarding the economy.
And I really think that's very interesting, because people don't understand that they have something called the plunge protection team that keeps the market up. And ordinarily, of course, you have a panic in the market. When the market starts to drop, why, people panic and they begin to sell.
Well, a lot of people would say, well, that's wonderful. Isn't it nice that these people are protecting the market from these rapid upswings and these downswings and these plunges? Isn't it nice that they're doing that for the economy and for us? What they don't realize is that there's a price tag attached to that operation, and the price tag is paid in an unseen way in the form of inflation, because in order to make that work, there has to be a siphoning of money, real money, purchasing power, away from the public, away from the value of the dollar, and into the hands or the pockets of the people who are manipulating these markets. And it's a tremendous outflowing of money into these special interests, and a tremendous weakening of the value of the purchasing power of the dollar.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, Dr. Stan, Ed Griffin was making that very valid point that if the free market is certainly operating, there will be times it'll go up, there'll be times it'll go down, but it'll follow the rules of the free market. But the thing is that the free market is no longer working. And we have the government manipulating the stock market, so then when it begins to drop, just because of the fact that they really doesn't have the value there, instead of having panic in the stock market, you have the government plunge protection team moving into the market and of course propping it up so that there is no panic. The psychology of the market is gone, and everything looks good, and we're all so happy when the market's going up, and we feel so bad when the market is going down. So they manipulate our emotions. We find Goldman Sachs saying the price of gold is going up, and yet, of course, they were the largest holders of shorts in gold, on the financial market. So on one hand, they're telling the people something. On the other hand, they know the price of gold is going to go down. So they tell the public the price is going to go up, so they'll get in. They themselves are shorting the market because they're going to make a lot of money when the price falls, and that's exactly what they've done.
Yes.
And, of course, how have they been able to hold the price of wheat to where it is? I mean, wheat was $1 a bushel at the beginning of the 20th century, in about 1901, 1910. Wheat was $1 a bushel. What is it now, $3 or $4 a bushel? It's all manipulated by the international grain dealers. The price of copper has been kept down artificially. They have cartels, but they can't tell the American people that everything is manipulated by a wealthy elite who have the power of the purse, who can print money and create wealth simply out of nothing, and by so doing have been able to corral pretty well the wealth of the world. So pick up the story there, Ed.
Well, that's an amazing story, because everything you said is true, in my opinion. And the mechanism by which these people do that is not easy to understand. It took me quite a few years to figure out what I call the Mandrake mechanism, which is the method by which the central banks of the world, including the Federal Reserve System as being one of the largest of the central banks, by which these people create money out of nothing. And yet, once you understand it, you think, the big aha comes along, then you look back on it and you say, oh, I get it now. That was really simple all along. And the problem has always been with trying to figure these mechanisms out is that you expect them to make sense. But if they don't make sense in terms of dollars and cents, in other words, they're nonsense because it's a scam. Once you understand that these mechanisms are basically scams, and a method by which the many, meaning the taxpayers, are being fleeced to benefit the few, then all of a sudden the bells go off and you say, oh, I see now how they're moving the money from point A to point B and sustaining these prices or suppressing these prices. I haven't really figured out the mechanisms and how they support the stock market or suppress the bullion market. But I do know it's wrapped up with the ability to sell leases on bullion and the ability to buy futures on stock. And once a person is in that field and they understand those mechanisms, they can figure that out pretty easily.
But the way it's worked is that they win, we lose. And, of course, if we follow our normal emotions, we read what it says in the newspaper, we follow what everybody else is doing, we're going to lose.
Well, you know, on this same topic, Stan, you asked what's on my mind. I guess the rest of that train of thought that you started with that question is looking into the future and wondering if the Bush administration, and it's more than the Bush administration, we're talking about the Council on Foreign Relations Group, which I lately have decided to identify with the name of Rhodesians, I should say. These are the descendants of Cecil Rhodes and their structures. And the question is whether these Rhodesians can really sustain the dollar in the face of all of these strains against it around the world. I know that the competing group out there, which is just as big and, in my opinion, just as powerful, which we will call the Leninists, there's another group out there that really is not going to let this go if they can prevent it, are working diligently to unseat the Rhodesians from their temporary position of dominance in the world. And, of course, they'll do what they can to attack the value of the dollar. And I just wonder, you know, if that tipping point should come when the U.S. dollar is no longer recognized as the basic international currency, the medium of exchange for all international transactions, if it should go to the euro or it should be divided up among a group of other currencies. I have a feeling that inflation in the United States would just suddenly go right through the ceiling. And the reason for that is that we have been expanding the money supply in the United States for decades at an amazing rate, and yet the inflation of the purchasing power of those dollars has not even come close to expressing what it should have been with that great expansion of the money supply. And the reason for that is that a lot of that money has gone overseas. That's what they used to call, exporting our inflation. Because so many nations of the world wanted U.S. dollars as the trading dollars with other nations. Their own currencies weren't worth very much. And so they couldn't really use their own currencies in many of the countries in South America and Africa and Asia and so forth, their currencies were totally useless, so they needed U.S. dollars if they wanted to exist on the international markets. So there was always a demand for these dollars, no matter how many the Federal Reserve System created. So we were exporting all these dollars, and people wanted them, and so we were able to get their goods and services with those dollars, and they wound up with our dollars. Well, now what happens when the time comes when they don't want those dollars anymore? They're going to send them back here, is to buy up whatever they can while they can. And of course, there are a lot of them. They'll all come flooding back to the United States, and they'll want to buy up everything we produce. They'll buy up our corporations. They'll buy up our land. They'll buy up our politicians. A lot of this has already been going on. But we haven't seen anything, in my opinion, compared to what it could be and perhaps will be in the near future if the dollar is unseated from its international throne.
Your remark about buying up the politicians reminds me of that old adage. You know what a honest politician is? He's a politician that once bought stays bought. You know, he doesn't just sell himself to some other bidder.
Yeah.
But, you know, of course, one thing that I learned from you, and I always used to watch the money in circulation, which is a interesting gauge to follow. But the one thing you taught me really is that it's not necessarily the money in circulation; it's the dollar bills and the currency as such. But it is the money supply, and it is based upon the credit and the bank entries and the massive amounts of money that there's nothing behind it. There's not even a dollar bill behind it. It's all a bank entry.
Right. Yeah, that's an amazing discovery when you get into this to realize that. Only about, less than 7%, probably around 3% of all of the money in the world doesn't even exist in a tangible form. It's not currency or coins. That's about 3% of it. And all the rest are just little ink blobs in a checkbook or digital impulses in a computer. That's all it is. It's just imaginary, and they represent credit. They represent debt. They represent the taxing power of the various governments and so forth, but they don't represent anything of intrinsic value. And that's really quite an amazing situation.
And I think that's so vitally important that people understand it is not simply the United States that's creating money out of nothing. Every country in the world has now gotten onto the game, because, you know, why should America be able to create all this money out of nothing? Why shouldn't other countries be able to create artificial prosperity for themselves? Oh, admittedly, it may be a little hard in their currency, but as with Japan, they didn't expand their own monetary supply. They created money out of nothing, and they let it out at 0% all over the world. And, of course, that's one of the major engineers of money that has been fueling the economy of Iceland and New Zealand and South Africa and countries throughout the world, was the money that the Japanese created out of nothing. And then, of course, that was lent. And that was what the carry trade was all about. And you have all of this money that's out there in the world sloshing around. I think it was the term I read recently. The money is sloshing around because there's nothing behind it. It's all simply bank entries. And one of these days, the day of reckoning is going to come. Either they're going to have to contract the amount of money supply that's out there, or they're going to have rapid inflation, and everything that people own in dollar-denominated increments is going to be destroyed. Would that be a fair estimate, Ed?
Well, yes, and I think that's where we started this little conversation, is how long can they keep this bubble from collapsing? In fact, how long can they keep it expanding? And the answer is forever. If we're living in a totalitarian system, they can do anything they darn please, because you don't have the freedom to react or to escape from any of this. As long as there's a modicum of the free market forces allowed to work, people can escape. They can escape the currency that's becoming worthless. They can buy gold and silver. They can go to another currency. They can even go to another country. You know, there's a certain amount of freedom involved there. But once you live in a global totalitarian system where the powers that be can decree, if they wish, that you cannot own gold or silver. They've done it once in the United States. It's also currently a practice in other countries, some other countries. They can do that anytime they wish. They can prevent you from leaving the country. They can prevent you from doing anything they wish in a totalitarian system. So we could be similar to the Soviet Union in the 60s, where they never had an economic collapse because the Politburo never allowed it to be said that they did. All the while, they were living in quite a bit of economic poverty, but they were still declaring that everything was wonderful.
Well, we're going to be back here in just a few minutes with Ed Griffin. If you have a question or comment, Ed is certainly one of the best informed people we have in the country as far as geopolitics and as far as what he calls the Rhodians, some people call the Olympians, doesn't matter what you call them. There is a ruling elite that is guiding the course of the world. And, of course, in my estimation, behind that are spiritual forces, dark spiritual forces. Well, our guest is Ed Griffin. We're talking certainly about what's happening economically in the world, and of course the fact that, you know, right now, of course, the question is, how long will they be able to keep this thing going? And if we were simply, isolated as a country, it could be kept going indefinitely. But there are other competing forces in the world. There's the Chinese communists, and there are the Russians, and then there are the people in the Middle East who really don't like us. And increasingly, I believe, there is a growing animosity and hatred towards America, because, of course, of the things that are happening and the things that we're doing. So, would you agree, Ed, because we are no longer isolated simply as a nation, because we've taken down our tariff walls, and because there is our other forces out there, that the Olympians or the Rhodians or however we want to call this ruling elite certainly are somewhat restricted in they will not be able to keep the game going indefinitely, or do you think they will be?
Well, that's the $64 million question. Will they succeed or not? And the answer isn't as easy as it might seem. You might say, well, let's just hope they can, or we hope that they can't. But there's another possibility, and that is that let's suppose that they fail. You might say, well, that's wonderful because we don't like what they're trying to do. But that doesn't mean that freedom will prevail. It could mean that the Leninists and some other group or some other totalitarian faction would take over, which would be just as bad. So it's not just a question of whether they will succeed or fail. The real question in my mind is whether or not the forces of individualism and freedom will prevail. And that does not look good at the present time, because there are very few people who are conscious of what that means. How many people can even define what freedom means? They think being free is simply being out of jail. There is no movement, unfortunately, in the world on the side of freedom, independence, and all of the things that we cherish, all of the things that made this country great in its beginning. There are no forces to defend that. All of the power and all of the organizations and all of the money and all of the media and all of the military and all of this force of society is on the side of collectivism, and divided in those two camps between the Leninists and the Rhodesians, or whatever we want to call those two groups. But they both believe pretty much the same. They have the same ideology, but they compete with each other over dominance. Who is it going to be that rules this new world order? Will it be the Leninists, or will it be the Rhodesians? And that's what's going on in the world today. There's no conflict between freedom and totalitarianism. The total conflict in the world today is between one form of totalitarianism and another form of totalitarianism. And that's a pretty sad state of affairs.
And I know that you've been working to try to counter that, and of course Ed's been given his whole life in this battle, as have I. And so tell us a little bit about, is it, what do you call it, Freedom Force?
Freedom Force International, yes, Stan, and that is what I have been trying to do, trying to create exactly the force that I said a moment ago doesn't yet exist. Well, it does exist in a very embryonic form in our little organization. Well, we have been in existence about 3 years now, and now we're quite international. We're in about 20 different countries. Most of our members, of course, are in the United States and in Canada and Australia. Those are the ones with the most members, although we have, as I said, members in 20 other countries.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Ed Griffin. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we have as our guest this evening Ed Griffin, and he's beginning to tell us about the Freedom Force movement. And before we go on with that, I do want to get to that and let you know how to get in touch with that. But we've got Ralph calling from Ohio. He's been waiting patiently. So, Ralph, did you have a question or comment for Mr. Griffin?
Well, actually, I'd like to say he's very well spoken, but, there are a lot of us out here that are considered quite different because I'm part Native American. We've been freedom fighters since 1692, I guess. But we know that we have to be able to be strong, because this government and its inside working orders are a disdainful aspect upon our own people. Our own Constitution has been trampled on so many occasions. that most people just say, well, no one can do anything about it.
Well, of course, most people really don't care, Ralph. Most people have it so good that they're not that concerned. And I agree with you that we've got real problems, but what's your solution?
My solution is to have a president in that office that can't be bought.
I see. How are you going to manage that?
Well, actually, there's a person... All right, well, I know that it's easier to say any time than to do it, especially when you have the Democrats and Republicans or the liberals. But when our government can say, oh, no, if you're not a naturalized citizen, you can't be president, well, that's bull. The original Constitution says that if a man has lived as a citizen of this United States for 13 years, he can run for any public office as well as the presidency. But our government changes those things, just like they have the Library of Congress.
Yeah, Ralph, you're absolutely right. The problem is, of course, that until the American people understand the problem, why nothing's going to change. Hey, I really want to get back to hearing what Ed has to say, but thank you so much for calling, and please hold your calls, because I want Ed to get his information out. Ed?
Well, I'd like to comment on that one. I think Ralph has brought up a good point, and it's an issue. It's a question that comes up a lot from people. If we could just get a good president in there, wouldn't that solve everything? And, of course, your reaction, Stan, was right on target. How are you going to do that? There's not a chance in the world that we're going to get a good president in there at any time in the future, so long as both major political parties and the media, which determine how people think about candidates, are firmly in the hands of the collectivists who now are running the show and making things exactly the way it is that we don't like. You see, what people need to realize is that there is a group, and you've talked about it a lot, Stan. It's the Council on Foreign Relations. It's sort of the focal point of about 4,000 people who literally are the rulers of America, not only in politics, but in the media and in the schools and the institutions, in the churches. They're everywhere, and the major corporations. These people literally run America, and they determine what Americans are allowed to hear in their news. They determine pretty much what books are allowed to be published and get into the big bookstores. They really have a lock over the American people, and of course the people themselves don't have a clue that that's true. If they did, they'd be it wouldn't work. But they don't. And so under those conditions, you say, well, how are you going to get a president in the office? It's not going to happen. You cannot get a good man into office today. And let's just take this one step further. What would happen if you did? Let's supposing that we got Ralph in there as president. Now, let's say that Ralph understands all of the issues. He's pure of heart. He cannot be corrupted. He has the best interest of his country and his fellow countrymen at heart. What is he going to do, being surrounded everywhere he turns in the White House, all of his staff have been picked for him by, he doesn't know who to appoint for these offices, and he goes to Congress and they're all aligned against him. He goes to the media and the media paints him like some kind of a demon. Every place he turns, he faces this block that I've been talking about, so that even if you got a good man in the White House, he soon would be viewed by his fellow Americans as the worst human being that ever lived because of the way he would be painted in the media. We're not going to solve this problem, in my opinion, unless we understand that we need to clean house, not just in politics, but everywhere. We need to recapture control of the power centers of society. And that's what Freedom Force International is setting out to do.
And of course, we've got to change the hearts of men, and we've got to make them really realize how important freedom is. And they have to understand, you know, really what these other people are doing. But first of all, they have to be incorruptible themselves.
Well, that's pretty hard. I think we need a system that has to anticipate that men are corruptible, and it'll work anyway.
All right, fine. We're going to be back in just a moment with Ed Griffin, and we'll be talking about Freedom Force. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and we've got Ralph calling. Pardon me, we've got Ed Griffin here, and of course, go ahead, Ed. Pick up the story of what you're trying to accomplish and how you hope to do it.
Well, let me back over that last segment again, because that is the heart of everything that we're trying to do with Freedom Force. We've looked around the world and we said, how did these people, the collectivists who now rule the world in all countries, or at least in the Western world, we're not talking about the Middle East or places where there are theocracies, but in Europe and the United States and most of the world, we have these collectivist societies. And the question is, how did these people get control of those countries? And the answer is really quite simple when you look at the history. They moved into the power centers of society and captured control of them at the top. People belong to organizations, and they instinctively turn to leaders to give them direction and where to go, and to a large extent even how to think. And so we follow our political leaders. We follow our union leaders. We follow our church leaders. You know, we follow our teachers. We follow the newscasters and the editorialists in the newspaper and so forth. We look to leaders to show us the way. And that is how only a few people can actually lead the many. The ones who are running the show today represent less than about one, or far less than 1% of the population. And you might say, well, how is it possible for 1% to rule the other 99? And it becomes very easy when the plan is for that 1% to make sure that they are in charge of all of the power centers of society, the groups and organizations to which people belong. And that is how the many will follow the leadership of the few. Our opponents have known this for many years, and in fact, there's been a conscious program, a strategy to do exactly that, and we talk about it at Freedom Force. We have the documentation. There's been a strategy for that for about 100 years, actually a little bit more than a century. It's been going on. It's taken a long time. And that is how they have done it. My view is that that is exactly how we have to undo it. Now, people get impatient. They say, that's not going to work. 100 years, I can't wait 100 years. I want it done for the next election. And Americans are typically in a hurry, you know. And just as Ralph, your former caller, came up with the solution, get a man in the presidency. That's how Americans think. Let's get somebody elected. Let's do it in the next 2 years or maybe the next 4 years so we can get back to our golf game. Meanwhile, the real world doesn't work that way.
All right, you hold that thought, Ed. We're going to be back here in just a minute with G. Edward Griffin talking about free. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest, G. Edward Griffin. Ed, I want you to get your telephone number. I want you to get your website out there so people will know how they can get in touch with you.
Well, thanks, Dan. I'd like that very much. We've got a couple of websites. The one that I'm talking about now is Freedom Force, and that's the one that I think is perhaps the most important. And that's easy to remember. It's Freedom Force International. All big, one long word, no breaks. FreedomForceInternational.org, and the ORG stands for organization. And that'll get you to our website, and I would advise you to plan to spend some time there because there's a lot of material.
All right, fine. That's Freedom Force International and
.org.
Go ahead, .org, and so pick up the story there.
Yes. Well, anyway, once you get to the FreedomForceInternational.org website, you'll see the strategy laid out pretty much as I have described it. We think that it's impossible to turn this thing around quickly. It didn't happen quickly, and you're not going to turn it around quickly. It's going to take probably a couple of generations, and that's discouraging at first, but the more you think about it, it's also encouraging because we know that it can be done. It may not be done by the next election, but you know, I think we have to have the long view of history. I look at my kids and my grandkids, and I hear the future calling, and it calls very, very loudly in my ears, and I can look at myself and say, you know, I'm doing something that in the next generation is going to make a big difference, and I feel good about it. So I don't know what else I can tell you about Freedom Force, Stan. It's a place where people have hope for the future. We have a plan. One of the things we discovered is that our opponents have a lot of things going for them. They've got a strategy. They have an ideology. It's called collectivism. They want global governance. They want big government. They want control over everyone's lives. They have a method for acquiring control over society, which is, as I mentioned before, penetrating into the power centers of society. They have organizational structures like the Council on Foreign Relations. They've got the Trilateralist Commission, and they meet at the Bilderberg Group, and they have other groupings where they have conferences all the time. They're working on these strategies and plans. They have communications. They have funding. They have discipline. They have training. They have leadership. They have all of these things. And so far, on the side of freedom, no one has come up with anything to match that kind of a force.
Well, then how could we possibly counter them? Because they have fabulous wealth. And it seems that, you know, whenever we try to raise funds, the wealth is always on the other side. And the big corporations are going along with the establishment. And the big tax-exempt foundations are controlled by the establishment. And certainly, you know, the banking interests are interlocked with this. So, I mean, you have this this combination of people of great wealth and great power who control the media and the tax-exempt foundations working to push this collectivist philosophy. How can we possibly counter that?
Well, you're certainly right, and I don't mean to imply that that is not a formidable opposition, because it is incredibly formidable. I mean, the money factor is extremely important. They have all the money they need. As a matter of fact, they make the bloody stuff. You know, we were talking about that earlier through the Federal Reserve System and other central banks. But as it turns out, I think the engine of history is fueled not as much by money as it is by human, by the soul, by the passion of human beings. I think that money is important in order to catch the attention and to purchase the loyalties of ruthless individuals, very clever individuals, and so forth. But once people get it through their minds that their freedom is at stake, their country is at stake, their families are at stake, their future is at stake, I think there's a passion there that will burn much deeper and hotter than the passion for money. We truly are on the bright side. We are on the light side, and they are on truly the dark side. They need money to buy men's loyalties. They often use, you know, bribery, blackmail, assassinations, all of the tools of the trade of coercion to force people to their way of performing the way they want them to do. Whereas we don't have to do any of those things. Even if we wanted to, we wouldn't. But when people have a passion for freedom, they will do whatever is necessary without having to be paid for it, and they'll devote their lives to it. That's a strength that we have that the other side does not have.
Well, you know, certainly I agree with everything you've said, Ed, but, you know, of course, I've been at this game almost as long as you have. When did you get started?
I can tell you almost exactly the day. It's toward the end of 1959.
Right. Well, I got started in 1962, mid-1962. So we've both been at it about the same period of time.
Long enough.
Well, of course, the great majority of my life. And it's been an exciting life, some tragedies, but all in all, I don't necessarily think that I would change it. I don't think I was supposed to. I think I'm doing what I've called to do, and I think you're doing what you were called to do. But one of the problems that I think all of us in the battle find, and I hear this from my callers all the time, is their response when they try to tell others what's happening. I had a call from a lady who listens to our station back in New York this morning. We have a large station that carries us up in upstate New York, 50,000-watt FM station, and we blast out all over there. And of course, she listens from 11 at night until 1 o'clock in the morning. And she said, you know, I started listening to you 2 years ago. And initially, I thought that you were just way off base. I thought that none of these things could be true. And she said it took me 6 months to realize that what you were saying is true. And now I keep trying to tell everybody that they should listen to you and what's going on, and they think I'm crazy. So, you know, how do we reach the people? We live in a wonderful, affluent society. We live in a society that has prosperity and really unparalleled, since I suppose the days of ancient Rome or ancient Greece. And as long as things are good, why should anybody want to change anything?
Well, that's the whole idea, and that's the danger of affluence. People do become, very comfortable and satisfied with their lives. And even though when they realize that things are wrong and that things are going to be bad in the future, they don't want to do anything to rock the boat for today. So that's human nature, and I don't know how to answer your question except to say that fortunately it's not necessary to have the majority or even a large preponderance of the population to do anything. It's one of the amazing facts of history, and that is that the course of history is always determined by about 1% or less of the population. Always has been that way and always will be that way. The 99% of the population will go along with whatever the trend is. And so this is a fact, and when you think about that, then that means that out of every 100 people you talk to, and you try and get them motivated and enlisted in some kind of a realistic program of action, you know in advance that 99 of them are going to turn you down. That's what you need to expect. But when you find that one and you enlist him into the cause, now you've got two. Then he'll find one, now you've got three, and so forth. You don't need an awful lot. Remember that the Council on Foreign Relations has a total membership of about 4,000 people. That's all it is. And yet, those people literally control the United States of America. 4,000 people. Probably less when you count the inner core within that group that controls the others. It doesn't take a lot. As long as they're in the right positions of power. And that's where time has its role. We can't just reach out and grab those positions of power in the next 2 years. That's going to take several generations to do. And that's where we have to have that long view of history that I was talking about a little while ago.
Well, now, do you actually have chapters for your organization throughout the world, or how
does
it work?
Oh, yes, we do. We have chapters. We don't have enough, but we're forming chapters all the time. And these are very, informal chapters. We give them a lot of leeway. The main thing right now is just to make sure that everybody on board thoroughly understands the creed of freedom. We have to have an ideological rudder so that what we're working for doesn't turn out to be a mess. You know, there's nothing more common in history than people overthrowing a tyranny or some kind of a totalitarian system only to find out a few years later that they've replaced it with one that was no better than it, or maybe even worse. And that happens over and over again because people have no idea of what they believe in. What they want. They know what they don't want, but they have no positive statement of ideals or no positive ideology, no blueprint for what they want to build. All they have is a concept of destroying. They want to destroy that which they hate, but they have no concept of what to build in its place. And so the first thing we do in Freedom Force is to make sure everybody understands the blueprint, which we call the Creed of Freedom. And that's sort of where we are right now, trying to get this into the minds and the hearts of our members, because once that's there, then it's just a matter of time before those people will find their way into positions of influence in the power centers of society, and the process will begin to turn the other way.
Well, of course, this idea of freedom is such an abstract idea. I mean, it's certainly something that men have sought down through the ages. Men have always wanted to be free, and from Scotch fighters who followed William Wallace to certainly many of the people who rallied behind Mao Tse-tung or Garibaldi, they were all fighting for freedom, and yet, of course, the freedom that they fought for was a false promise. Certainly not those behind William Wallace, because I think he was really concerned about overthrowing the tyranny of Bonnie Prince Charlie, but the throat body. But, you know, so many times, as you pointed out, people are looking for freedom. They look and see what's going on today. And even the communist in America looks at the military-industrial complex. Of course, if he reads his communist publications, he will never see the Council on Foreign Relations, you know, mentioned, because, of course, the Council on the Elite in this country financed the communist movement, the socialist movement, as a controlled opposition. But, I mean, the communists look and see the injustice in our society, and they want to rectify it and bring a more equitable society. How would you approach people like that and let them understand that, you know, what the solutions put forward by the communists are actually the programs put forward by the very people they oppose, and the Council on Foreign Relations and the Bilderbergers and the Trilateral Commission?
Well, that's exactly how I approach them, Stan. I point out to them that there is no difference in the basic programs of those two groups. As I was talking about before, they believe the same ideologically. It's just that they oppose each other for dominance in the New World Order. And once a person can, you know, look at both sides and say, gee, they believe in the same things, it's pretty hard for them to have a loyalty to one side anymore. And suddenly the eyes are open. They realize that they've been had. We have a lot of people in our movement who have come from both of those camps. I think we have more people that come from what we erroneously call the left. I hate those words. They have no meaning, but we have a general idea. When we say left, we're talking about people who have an affinity to Marxism and Leninism and so forth. We have a lot of people in our movement who came from that position, and they realize that, you know, it's a false promise, as you said. And once, you know, in fact, I'd rather have somebody come from a position like that than somebody who just didn't care.
And I think that's so true, Ed. One of the problems that bothers me is that so many just people don't care. At least I can respect a communist. He's willing to give his life for a purpose, and if you could ever win him to our side, then he would be certainly as fervent in supporting the cause of freedom as he was in supporting the cause that would take freedom away. But he doesn't understand that. Because, of course, he reads about and studies the theory of Marxism rather than the practice of Marxism.
Yes. Well, you're so right. And we do have people that have come from that camp, and they are some of our best fighters.
All right, fine. Of course, then, of course, people would like to get in touch with Ed Griffin, and you know his website. Give it out again, Ed.
Yes, the website is freedomforceinternational.org. Now, we do have another website, Stan, for those who might be interested in our books and our videotapes and audiotapes.
Go ahead.
It's a commercial site, but you do have to get hold of some of this educational material to get a handle on what I'm talking about. So I invite people to come to the Reality Zone, and that's simple enough. It's realityzone.com, and that's a commercial site, whereas freedomforceinternational.org is our site for the organization.
All right, fine. The organization's been about around about 3 years, and I know you put your heart and your soul into trying to offer people an alternative to what's going on. How do we understand what freedom is? Because freedom is such an abstract idea, and I know that you can articulate that so well.
Well, you can talk for hours, if not days, on that, but it need not be that complicated. Freedom is a negative concept. Freedom is comes about when there are restrictions on activities, not when there are limits on activities. The purpose of government is simply, and this is my view now, simply to protect, now that's a negative concept, protect the life, liberty, and property of its citizens, nothing more. Once government takes on an aggressive or a positive function of, like, providing for people, not protecting them, but providing for them, now it has crossed over the line, because in order to provide for some, you must first take from others. And once you get into that taking mode, it's the beginning of the end for freedom, because everybody wants control of those levers so they can decide who gets taken from and who gets given to, and we all know how that ends up. So freedom is simply this. Freedom is the ability to do anything you wish, so long as it does not violate the life, liberty, or property of others. It's that simple.
And so, of course, freedom then would be to limit the power of the federal government so that men could be free.
Yes, so that even the government, well, would the government, let's say, is the majority. You see, one of the things about democracy, very misleading word, is that we think that, well, the majority ought to be able to do what it wishes. But in truth, the passion of the majority is one of the biggest offenders to freedom. The majority decides that that they want something that the minority has. Or it goes on and on. I think one of the main functions of government is to protect the minority against the passion of the majority.
And then, of course, what you're really describing is the dangers of democracy, which our founding fathers abhorred. In fact, as James Madison wrote so well, democracies have Arab-ed spectacles of turbulence and contention, have ever been incompatible with personal security and private property, and are usually as short in their lives as they are violent in their deaths. And I think that comes from the 10th of the Federalist Papers, and you should memorize that. You should read it over and over again. America was never meant to be a democracy. So why does President Bush keep talking about democracy and want to bring democracy to all of the nations of the world? Well, Ed, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up this evening's program. An hour just goes by so rapidly, and I always do enjoy having the opportunity to spend some time with you and get your ideas out, but you have 3 minutes to wrap up this evening's program.
Well, thanks, Dan. I think I'll just start off by thanking you for inviting me to be here this evening. I've always enjoyed swapping ideas with you. It's been many years. And by the way, I saw your part in a new video called, something about America.
Oh, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning.
No, it's The Assault Against America or something like that.
Oh, yes. Okay, that's another one. I've been invited to be on a number of movies recently.
Anyway, it's an excellent thing you did. You had an excellent piece in there, and you articulated the problem very well. So I want to just congratulate you and acknowledge you for that. Well, tonight we've talked about what's on my mind, which I don't often get a chance to talk about. Usually I'm asked technical questions about the Federal Reserve, and we get into that monkey business about how they create money out of nothing and how that leads to inflation. And it sounds, though, like your audiences are pretty seasoned in all of this and probably know pretty much what that is all about. So anyway, I'm rambling here, trying to think of some way to wrap this up. I think if I could leave a message for your audience tonight, it's that the time has come for you folks who know what the problem is to quit studying the problem and start solving the problem. It doesn't make any difference what you know, how many books you've read, how correct you are in your theories, how good a debater you are, how well you write. None of that makes any difference unless you do something with that knowledge that tends to make a difference in the world. Unless it tends to move that big wheel, to make something happen. And the only thing that will move that wheel in terms of political and social affairs for men in the future, in my opinion, the only thing that will work is for people of mind who understand the concepts of freedom, which we have been discussing, for those people to get off of their chairs, to get out of their living rooms, away from their television sets, and to go into the communities and become activists, become participants in the power centers of society, the organizations where the masses go. We have to go to the people. We can't expect for them to come to us and say...
Hold that thought for just a moment here. Yes. Just bring us in. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening has been Ed Griffin and G. Edward Griffin, and always a pleasure to have you with us. And Ed, we're out of time, but Ed says basically you've got to get involved, and you've got to go into the power centers, and you've got to participate in society, and you've got to help take America back. Would that be a pretty good appraisal?
That's definitely it, but the focus is on how to do it. Can't do it by writing letters to your congressmen. Those are the guys that got you into this mess in the first place. You don't write letters to them and say, won't you please be nice? You've got to get involved in power centers of society and start the wheels turning to replace those guys with somebody who has the picture right.
God bless, and thanks very much, Ed.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
All right, fine. Well, that was J. Edward Griffin, and I hope you enjoyed his discussion of how we've got to get involved. And we do need to reach other people, and of course, this is what we do 5 hours a day, and we do hope many of you out there in the listening audience will want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. We've got about 60 stations, outlets to carry our program every week, and you can listen to us 5 hours a day somewhere in America on radio, and five hours a day somewhere on the internet. We have about 4 or 5 different internets that carry one or another of our programs, and then 4 hours of shortwave and 9 hours of satellite on Telstar 5. And we're told, of course, when lightning hit our uplink the other day, the gentleman in charge and the gentleman who sells the satellite systems got over 125 calls immediately saying, "What happened?" So we've got a lot of people out there listening. And if you can't get us one of the other ways, well, you can, of course, get us on Telstar 5. And let me point out that Joyce Riley is there, Pastor Chuck Chris Meyer, Pastor Butch Paul, all good friends, all with a strong, a patriotic and Christian message, because truly we are involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men. Now, remember, of course, if you'd like to know more about Radio Liberty, go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Remember, we do carry the Berkey products, and if you get them to us, why, of course, you get a video and or a 4-tape set we produced. We do hope that many of you will want to get the information on what is happening financially in the world. And that would be our talk on the Financial Tsunami DVD or VHS, and, of course, the syllabus that goes with that. So certainly you'll want to have the material on the Financial Tsunami. You'll want to understand the wars. That would be my talk in Iraq, The Untold Story, which is available only on VHS. But it comes with a syllabus, and that syllabus has the documentation to show you that all of the wars, the last century, were contrived, including the war in Iraq. It was specifically created, just as Vietnam was created, as a diversion, and as our boys go overseas to fight and die for freedom. We are losing our freedom here at home. Wars are always used as a diversion. It's happened over and over again. That's what Korea was all about. Everybody was concerned because America, Harry Truman, had turned Eastern Europe and China over to the communists. How did we get a diversion? Why, we went to war with North Korea, but we never tried to win the war. We didn't try to win it in Korea. We didn't try to win it in Vietnam. And we're not really allowed to try to win it in Iraq today. Understand what this is about. Our number 1-800-544-8927. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection.